is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The American economy, the global economy. Underline, these are the doubts around the world these days as to whether we're in a recovery from the pandemic or we're approaching a recession, or at the same time we're prey to the geopolitics of Asia or of Europe, a war in Europe, and threats, genuine, overwhelming military threats against peace in Asia. I welcome Elizabeth Peake, Liz Peake of Fox News, a columnist of The Hill, a columnist much on Fox Business, to comment right now on the presenting matter of the day. The President of the United States on holiday, good for Mr. Biden, is to sign the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. I read from the Wall Street Journal reporting. The Democrat-backed package is one of Mr. Biden's most consequential accomplishments since taking office, the latest in a string of legislative victories that the president's aides hope will improve his standing heading into November's midterm election. Liz, a very good evening to you. The Inflation Reduction Act. The irony here is that the New York Times and the Washington Post and other distinguished publications refer to it as the Climate and Health Bill. Now, they are the same thing, I believe. However, this question of inflation reduction, you have written a column saying you can't find any. So is the reduction so small that it's there and we need to dig it out? Or was this a misstep by Mr. Schumer that he couldn't correct? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think what you have is a legislative pileup, basically, that has all to do with climate change and very little to do with inflation reduction. All of the credible analyses of this bill, whether it's by the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, or the Penn Wharton model of government expenditures, et cetera, everybody shows it does not reduce inflation. If there is any impact on inflation, it's in the out years, and that is very minor at best. So the Democrats have a problem, and the liberal media picked up on that pretty quickly. They can't really go around the country talking about the Inflation Reduction Act because only 12% of people polled actually think that's what it is. 40% think the bill is going to make matters worse, make prices go up even faster. So they've had to rebrand this as the Climate and Healthcare Bill. The problem with that rebranding is that Gallup did their usual survey in the last week or two of most pressing issues for Americans. Top 11 issues don't even include climate change. So this is something that scratches an itch for the Democratic Party. Yes, there are people who are genuinely concerned about climate change. They want to see us press more quickly towards renewable fuels. But the reality is that hastening of our transition to renewable fuels will do nothing for inflation. And in fact, I can almost guarantee you it will drive prices higher. We know that because if you look at the top 10 states that have imposed the most ambitious renewable energy mandates, they have the highest electricity cost in the nation, and not by a little. In California, electricity costs are 80% higher than they are on average throughout the rest of the country. So what this push towards renewable fuels, electric vehicles, et cetera, will mean is higher electricity costs because our grid, our infrastructure really is not ready to accommodate this big transition, and it will mean higher costs. So I think, honestly, I think the bill is, forgive me, this is a real technical term, is a real turkey, and the Democrats, I think, are going to have a hard time selling it because, interestingly, the most salient argument they have on its impact on inflation is that it reduces the deficit. You and I could argue for an hour that it doesn't really reduce the deficit, that there are a lot of assumptions made about, for example, Obamacare subsidies expiring after 3 years. We all know that's not going to happen. There are a lot of very grand expectations for what adding 87,000 IRS agents will bring in the way of incremental revenue. But let's even admit that 10 years out, the overall impact on the deficit is a reduction of $300 billion, as the Democrats promise. If they are so convinced that less deficit spending is good for inflation, how do they argue that the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan that was passed last year didn't increase inflation? Most of us think it did, but Democrats are resolute in saying, oh, no, we're not responsible. That bill had no impact. So I think they are honest. I think this bill has put them in a corner of their own making.
The three parts, I'm told, there's the pharmaceutical part, the medical part. You mentioned Obamacare. There's the climate part, subsidies for electric vehicles and investment in building renewables. And then there's the tax part. And there's one small piece of the tax part that puzzles me. The 1% tax on stock buybacks. Liz, what is a stock buyback and why? What is the prejudice in Congress against stock buybacks? About private companies using their money to reduce the amount of shares that are out, which helps the people who have invested in the company.
Yeah, somehow that's not supposed to be acceptable to Democrats. Well, when you do a stock buyback, it's because you don't know, you don't have a better use, if you will, for your the money that your business is generating, the capital that is in excess of what you need to invest. This is obviously an issue for example, a lot of tech companies, which historically have not been able to reinvest all of their earnings in their business because they're not typically capital-intensive businesses. So those companies in particular have employed stock buybacks as a way of rewarding shareholders. And it does do that because it tends to prop up the share price. But somehow that's considered sort of dirty pool by Democrats in Congress who would rather these companies spend on capital, in other words, building plant and equipment. But if your company doesn't want plant and equipment, doesn't need it, it's kind of a foolish argument, honestly. Will it make a huge difference? No, I don't think 1% is going to really sway most companies' decisions on capital allocation. The other possible thing companies can do if they can't reinvest in their own business, there are two things, really. One is increase their dividends. And companies historically have turned to share buybacks over dividends because it's a one-time thing. If 2 years later, you know, your earnings take a hit for some reason, you don't want to be paying a dividend that's excessive under those conditions. But a one-time stock buyback really has not that issue going forward, if you will. The other thing, of course, companies can do is make acquisitions. But Congress, Democrats, again, in Congress are increasingly, and the Biden and White House, negative on particularly tech companies buying up would be competitors or making other acquisitions that they feel are in restraint of competition. So, you know, it's just a way of raising money, John. I don't think there's a very solid philosophical argument behind this tax. They just needed money, revenues to spend on basically electric vehicle subsidization and other cherished Democrat ambitions. And this is one of the places they went to find it.
We come to the global picture because the American economy depends upon trade and investment overseas are transnationals. The picture globally is grim. Asia, I will speak to generally about the Chinese economy. It is remarkably in trouble about its property bubble, about its brutalization of its own people, about using surveillance techniques to keep people from challenging banks who have the depositors' money and won't return any of it. The trouble there is translating into a political argument, anticipating Xi Jinping's third term as General Secretary. We can speak to what's going on in Europe. The war in Europe now introduces the fact that there is not enough energy so far to keep the industries recovering and to maintain the residents as we approach the winter months. This is true in all along Northern Europe, but it's also true in Southern Europe right now because of the enormous heat wave that's settled and dried up the Rhine and the Danube and the Po River Valley. Our trading partners in Europe are in trouble, Liz, and I don't think there's anything we can immediately do about it because of the poor planning exercised by the EU over these years and over-reliance on Russia. Is there a plan B that you've read anywhere, Liz?
Well, I think our legislators are pretty transfixed by not being dragged down by what's going on in Europe. Sadly, we are not learning anything from the incredibly reckless energy planning or misplanning that has taken place in Northern Europe in particular, and Germany is a good example of that, obviously. How any country could decide to be so reliant on Russian imported gas and oil is beyond me. But of course, it also is the fact that the Green Party in Germany, which basically put forward many years ago and they adopted a Green New Deal, which is very similar to the proposals that have come from Bernie Sanders and other people on the left in America. Those, you know, because you have a coalition government in Germany, you have outsized power wielded by groups that maybe aren't representative of a large portion of the population, and that is the Green Party, and that's what they accomplished. They moved away from traditional oil and gas as fast as they could. They're not alone, by the way. England did the same thing, and other countries have too, and they are really in a pickle. So, you know, what can we do? The best thing we could do to help the European energy situation is to produce as much oil and gas as possible, because that reduces the pressure on oil availability elsewhere for other countries. And we are now an exporter of natural gas, which has become LNG, liquefied natural gas. And that is definitely a plus for our European trading partners and other countries, which are very quickly developing the capacity to import and use LNG. That is, you know, if we had a sensible White House, they would be pushing domestic oil and gas production as hard as possible, and they would explain to the American people this is necessary not only for our own country to bring prices down, but also for the rest of the world. Now, right now, the pressure is off the White House on gasoline prices and oil prices generally because of China. Basically, it's China's slowdown that you alluded to that has brought down commodity prices across the board, and nowhere more importantly than oil and gas. I can't recall the numbers now, but very recently I looked at China's imports of oil, and they've just crashed because their economy is growing at probably half the rate they expected. And so that has taken a huge amount of pressure off of oil prices worldwide, and that's why gasoline prices are coming down in the U.S. So to some degree, we are really being helped by that in terms of our fighting inflation.
I'm speaking with Elizabeth Peak, Liz Peak of Fox News, a columnist of The Hill, a columnist, much on Fox Business. We're speaking to the American economy, the global economy. However, when we come back, what about inflation? What is to be done? As Liz says very carefully, it's China's decline that is leading to the reduction in fuel costs at the pump right now. That is not a fixed fact. It's just the presenting fact. What else needs to be done here in the U.S. to tame what, all accounting, 8.5% was seen as a good number? 8.5% annual inflation is crushing to people on fixed incomes, crushing to those who have to pay bills over long term. So when we come back, what is to be done? I'm John Batchelor.